It's been nearly 6 months since Donald Trump left Washington after losing the presidential race to Joe Biden. And for months, the former president has falsely claimed the election was rigged against him. His defeat and his chaotic, controversial final year in office are the focus of a new book, Frankly, We Did Win This Election, The Inside Story of How Trump Lost. It's by Michael Bender of the Wall Street Journal.
Well, Bender tells Dimitri the main reason President Trump falsely insists he won last year's election is he can't conceive of the idea that he could ever lose to the man he nicknamed Sleepy Joe.
He's been promising this very scenario to all of the country, not just for a year, Dimitri, but for decades. And that's one of the things I do in this book. I go back even before he became president and show how he became a candidate and how he's always contested any defeat, any electoral defeat, not just promising in 2016 that Hillary could only win with fraud, but even when he lost an Emmy for The Apprentice, claimed that it had been election fraud. This was the scenario he'd been promising for a long time.
You're a hard-bitten reporter, of course, but were you rattled when you learned about the language the president used to describe what he wanted done with the people demonstrating in D.C. after the murder of George Floyd? There's just shoot them, beat the bleep out of them, crack their skulls. Did he really want the military to take to the streets and violently attack these protesters using the Insurrection Act?
I think the answer is yes to that, and I say that because there were repeated meetings where he used this kind of language. It wasn't a one-off where he was upset about one thing or another. It was repeated meetings that he made these kind of orders. And yes, it was shocking. This was not the book I set out to write. I thought this book was going to be largely a chronicle of my time covering Trump, 4 years in the White House and twice as a candidate, and what that was like and that experience. But as I interviewed people, I was shocked to learn. We all know the story of chaos of this administration, whether you covered it every day or lived out in the suburbs in the Midwest and couldn't avoid it on your TV or your telephone. But it wasn't the chaos that people around Trump were worried about. They thought he had become dangerous to the country. They thought he'd grown violent and unhinged in his desperation to hold on to power, the power of the presidency, remain in the White House. He wanted to shoot Americans who were protesting civil rights abuses. His own Secretary of State thought he might lean into a war to buttress his own argument to stay in power. These are shocking scenarios. Even after 4 years of covering Trump in the White House, I was shocked to hear.
What about Mark Milley, Joint Chiefs Chairman? Was he really the only person around the president in those final weeks and days to say, no way, you're not doing this?
He was the only one to say it directly and concisely. That's one of the interesting things I've found here, too, whether it's from starting back in 2016, 2017. There's a lot of people around Trump who view themselves as truth tellers, and a lot of people who tell themselves that they, you know, have spoken truth to power. But let me tell you, that's not an easy thing to do in this White House or any other White House, to tell the president of the United States he's wrong or that he should do something different or that his instincts are off. And maybe harder for Trump, if you're working for Trump. What I learned was that people would sort of hedge it, you know, and one example is Mike Pence in the final days before January 6th, lots of back and forth with Trump over whether or not Pence has the constitutional authority to reject free and fair election. Pence and his team thinks that he was very clear. But what he told Trump was that, well, I don't think I have the authority to do this, but if you and your team give me what your lawyers have come up with, I'll review anything you have. Now, Pence is a respectful man. He's a polite man. And that, I think that's what he was trying to show the president. But the president, here's that last part, that there's a possibility. When I interviewed him twice down in Mar-a-Lago, he told me no, that Pence never told him that he didn't have the authority or that he wouldn't overturn these elections. Take Trump at his word if you want to, but that's definitely the message that the president came away with.
We asked Bender, with so many Trump books out right now, what makes his different?
What I think makes my book different, not just from what's coming out now, but in the entire pantheon of Trump books, there's no shortage. It's an entire library available on Trump books. What mine does that none other do is look at this president through three angles, through inside the room interviews, people inside the Oval Office, behind the curtains of a $2 billion reelection campaign that is scrambling in the final days to catch up to Joe Biden. And I embedded for 2 years with some of Trump's most loyal supporters, people who went to 30, 40, and I'm not joking here, 50 rallies, and to find out why they went back over and over again, what it was about themselves and what they thought about this president that made them want to return over and over again.
There's a little anecdote that I understand goes beyond the four corners of the book, that there's a woman who went to something like 60 or 70 rallies and finally encountered the man himself, and he said something sort of dismissive to her. That's quite a letdown, isn't it?
Yeah, it's revealing. I mean, that's the sort of sad part of these Trump fans that I followed, is They're so dedicated to him. They're so loyal to him. One man refuses to get a COVID test. He's horribly sick and is sure that he has COVID. He's in his 60s, overweight. He's a smoker. He knows the risks, but he also knows that COVID had been politicized and doesn't want to add to the number of tests under Trump, let alone if he's positive. He doesn't even want to have another test on Trump's watch. You know, and then by the end, yeah, Sandra, she goes to Florida. She's buying tickets to fundraisers for nonprofits that are using Mar-a-Lago for the space just for the chance to see Trump, and hangs back after everyone's left to trying to be the last one to leave because she knows he's golfing that day and might see him coming in on his golf cart. She does see him. He's walking in the back and she yells out his name. And the president looks at her and says, "Do you work here?" Now, Sandra was thrilled to have a little back and forth with Trump, but Sandra's been to 70 rallies in the front row almost every time. You know, there's no reason to believe that Trump would recognize, or anyone, Bruce Springsteen or Celine Dion or something like that. They're not going to recognize people in the front row, but you go that often, you must have some connection. I know that you have a connection to that person on stage, and yeah, it was a little, I was disappointed that that was his reaction when Sandra told me about it. This is the opportunity. Republicans have an opportunity here in front of them to redefine the party post-Trump. And whether they take that opportunity, I don't know. But I do know the details in this book make very clear that there's no excuse to go into that decision with anything less than their eyes wide open.
Wall Street Journal reporter Michael Bender on Skype. His new book is Frankly, We Did Win This Election, The Inside Story of How Trump Lost.